The twin city of Ankh-Morpork, foremost of all the cities bounding the Circle Sea, was, as a matter of course, the home of a large number of gangs, thieves' guilds, syndicates, and similar organisations. This was one of the reasons for its wealth. Most of the humbler folk on the Widdershin side of the river, in Morpork's mazy alleys, supplemented their meagre incomes by filling some small role for one or other of the competing gangs. So it was that by the time Hugh and Twoflower entered the courtyard of the Broken Drum, the leaders of a number of them were aware that someone had arrived in the city who appeared to have much treasure. Some reports from the more observant spies included details about a book that told the stranger what to say, and a box that walked by itself. These facts were immediately discounted. No magician capable of such enchantments ever came within a mile of Morpork docks. It still being that hour when most of the city was just rising or about to go to bed, there were few people in the drum to watch Twoflower descend the stairs. When the luggage appeared behind him and started to lurch confidently down the steps, the customers at the rough wooden tables, as one man, looked suspiciously at their drinks. Broadman was browbeating the small troll who swept the bar when the trio walked past him.
"What in hell was that?"
he said.
"Just don't talk about it," hissed Hugh.
Twoflower was already thumbing through his book.
"What's he doing?"
said Broadman, arms akimbo.
"It tells him what to say. I know it sounds ridiculous,"
muttered Hugh.
"How can a book tell a man what to say?"
"I wish for an accommodation, a room, lodgings, the lodging house full board, are your rooms clean? A room with a view, what is your rate for one night?"
said Twoflower in one breath. Broadman looked at Hugh. The beggar shrugged.
"He's got plenty money," he said.
"Tell him it's 3 copper pieces, then, and that thing will have to go in the stable."
"Hmm?" said the stranger. Broadman held up 3 thick red fingers, and the man's face was suddenly a sunny display of comprehension. He reached into his pouch and laid 3 large gold pieces in Broadman's palm. Broadman stared at them. They represented about 4 times the worth of the Broken Drum, staff included. He looked at Hugh. There was no help there. He looked at the stranger. He swallowed.
"Yes,"
he said, in an unnaturally high voice.
"And then there's meals, of course. Do you understand? Yes? Food? You eat? No?"
He made the appropriate motions.
"Foot?"
said the little man.
Yes, said Broadman, beginning to sweat. "Have a look in your little book. I should."
The man opened the book and ran a finger down one page. Broadman, who could read after a fashion, peered over the top of the volume. What he saw made no sense.
"Food,"
said the stranger. "Yes. Cutlet, hash chop, stew, ragu, fricassee, minced collops, souffle, dumpling, blancmange, sorbet, gruel, sausage, not to have a sausage, beans without a bean, kickshaws, jelly, jam, giblets." He beamed at Broadman.
"All that?"
said the innkeeper weakly.
"It's just the way he talks," said Hugh. "Don't ask me why. He just does."
All eyes in the room were watching the stranger, except for a pair belonging to Rincewind the Wizard, who was sitting in the darkest corner nursing a mug of very small beer. He was watching the luggage. Watch Rincewind. Look at him. Scrawny, like most wizards, and clad in a dark red robe on which a few mystic sigils were embroidered in tarnished sequins. Some might have taken him for a mere apprentice enchanter, who had run away from his master out of defiance, boredom, fear, and a lingering taste for heterosexuality. Yet around his neck was a chain bearing the bronze octagon that marked him as an alumnus of the Unseen University, the High School of Magic, whose time and space transcendent campus is never precisely here or there. Graduates were usually destined for mageship at least, but Rincewind, after an unfortunate event, had left knowing only one spell, and made a living of sorts around the town by capitalising on an innate gift for languages. He avoided work, as a rule, but had a quickness of wit that put his acquaintances in mind of a bright rodent, and he knew sapient pearwood when he saw it. He was seeing it now, and he didn't quite believe it. An archmage, by dint of great effort and much expenditure of time, might eventually obtain a small staff made from the timber of the sapient pear tree. It grew only on the sites of ancient magic. There were probably no more than two such staffs in all the cities of the Circle Sea. A large chest of it, Rincewind tried to work it out, and decided that even if the box were crammed with star opals and sticks of auriculatum, then the contents would not be worth one-tenth of the price of the container. A vein started to throb in his forehead. He stood up and made his way to the trio.
"May I be of assistance?" he ventured.
"Shove off, Rincewind," snarled Broadman.
"I only thought it might be useful to address this gentleman in his own tongue," said the wizard gently. "He's doing all right on his own," said the innkeeper, but took a few steps backward.
Rincewind smiled politely at the stranger and tried a few words of Chimeran. He prided himself on his fluency in the tongue, but the stranger only looked bemused.
"It won't work," said Hugh knowledgeably. "It's the book, you see. It tells him what to say. Magic."
Rincewind switched to High Borogravian, to Vanglamesht, Sumtree, and even Black Orug, the language with no nouns and only one adjective, which is obscene. Each was met with polite incomprehension. In desperation, he tried heathen Trob, and the little man's face split into a delighted grin.
"At last," he said. "My good sir, this is remarkable."
Although in Trob, the last word, in fact, became "a thing which may happen but once in the usable lifetime of a canoe hollowed diligently by axe and fire from the tallest diamond-wood tree that grows in the noted diamond-wood forests on the lower slopes of Mount Awayawa, home of the fire gods, or so it is said."
"What was all that?" said Broadman, suspiciously.
"What did the innkeeper say?" said the little man.
Rincewind swallowed. "Broadman," he said, "two mugs of your best ale, please."
"You can understand him?"
"Oh, sure."
"Well, tell him he's very welcome. Tell him breakfast is one gold piece."
For a moment, Broadman's face looked as though some vast internal struggle was going on, and then he added with a burst of generosity,
"I'll throw yours in too." "Stranger," said Rincewind levelly, "if you stay here, you will be knifed or poisoned by nightfall. But don't stop smiling, or so will I."
"Oh, come now," said the stranger, looking around. "This looks like a delightful place, a genuine Morporkian tavern. I've heard so much about them, you know, all these quaint old beams, and so reasonable, too."
Rincewind glanced around quickly, in case some leakage of enchantment from the magician's quarter across the river had momentarily transported them to some other place. No, this was still the interior of the Drum, its walls stained with smoke, its floor a compost of old rushes and nameless beetles, its sour beer not so much purchased as merely hired for a while. He tried to fit the image around the word quaint, or rather the nearest Trob equivalent, which was that pleasant oddity of design found in the little coral houses of the sponge-eating pygmies on the Orohai Peninsula. His mind reeled back from the effort. The visitor went on,
"My name is Twoflower,"
and extended his hand. Instinctively, the other three looked down to see if there was a coin in it.
"Pleased to meet you," said Rincewind. "I'm Rincewind. Look, I wasn't joking. This is a tough place."
"Good. Exactly what I wanted."
"Eh?
What is this stuff in the mugs?"
"This? Beer." "Thanks, Broadman. Yes, beer. You know, beer."
"Ah, the so typical drink. A small gold piece will be sufficient payment, do you think? I do not want to cause offence."
It was already half out of his purse.
Yeah, croaked Rincewind. I mean, no, it won't cause offence.
Good. You say this is a tough place, frequented, you mean, by heroes and men of adventure?
Rincewind considered this.
Yes, he managed.
Excellent. I would like to meet some.
An explanation occurred to the wizard.
Ah, he said, you've come to hire mercenaries.
Warriors who fight for the tribe with the most milk-nut meal.
Oh, no, I just want to meet them, so that when I get home I can say that I did it.
Rincewind thought that a meeting with most of the Drum's clientele would mean that Twoflower never went home again, unless he lived downriver and happened to float past.
"Where is your home?"
he inquired. Broadman had slipped away into some back room, he noticed. Hugh was watching them suspiciously from a nearby table.
"Have you heard of the city of Bess Pelagic?"
"Well, I didn't spend much time in Trob. I was just passing through, you know."
"Oh, it's not in Trob. I speak Trob because there are many betrobby sailors in our ports. Bess Pelagic is the major seaport of the Agatean Empire."
"Never heard of it, I'm afraid."
Twoflower raised his eyebrows.
"No, it is quite big. You sail turnwise from the Brown Islands for about a week, and there it is. Are you all right?"
He hurried round the table and patted the wizard on the back. Rincewind choked on his beer. The counterweight continent. Three streets away, an old man dropped a coin into a saucer of acid and swirled it gently. Broadman waited impatiently. Ill at ease in a room made noisome by vats and bubbling beakers and lined with shelves containing shadowy shapes suggestive of skulls and stuffed impossibilities.
"Well?" he demanded.
"One cannot hurry these things," said the old alchemist peevishly. "Assaying takes time. Ah!"
He prodded the saucer, where the coin now lay in a swirl of green colour. He made some calculations on a scrap of parchment.
"Exceptionally interesting," he said at last.
"Is it genuine?"
The old man pursed his lips.
"It depends on how you define the term," he said. "If you mean, is this coin the same as, say, a $50 piece, then the answer is no."
"I knew it," screamed the innkeeper, and started towards the door.
"I'm not sure that I'm making myself clear," said the alchemist.
Broadman turned round angrily.
"What do you mean?"
"Well, you see, what with one thing and another, our coinage has been somewhat watered over the years. The gold content of the average coin is barely 4 parts in 12, the balance being made up of silver, copper."
"What of it?"
"I said this coin isn't like ours. It is pure gold."
After Broadman had left, at a run, the alchemist spent some time staring at the ceiling. Then he drew out a very small piece of thin parchment, rummaged for a pen amongst the debris on his workbench, and wrote a very short, small message. Then he went over to his cages of white doves, black cockerels, and other laboratory animals. From one cage he removed a glossy-coated rat, rolled the parchment into the file attached to a hind leg, and let the animal go. It sniffed around the floor for a moment, then disappeared down a hole in the far wall. At about this time, a hitherto unsuccessful fortune-teller, living on the other side of the block, chanced to glance into her scrying bowl, gave a small scream, and within the hour had sold her jewellery, various magical accoutrements, most of her clothes, and almost all her other possessions that could not be conveniently carried on the fastest horse she could buy. The fact that later on, when her horse collapsed in flames, she herself died in a freak landslide in the Morpork Mountains, proves that death, too, has a sense of humour. Also, at about the same moment as the homing rat disappeared into the maze of runs under the city, scurrying along in faultless obedience to an ancient instinct, the patrician of Ankh-Morpork picked up the letters delivered that morning by Albatross. He looked pensively at the topmost one again, and summoned his chief of spies. And in the broken drum, Rincewind was listening open-mouthed as Twoflower talked.
So I decided to see for myself, the little man was saying. 8 years saving up this has cost me, but worth every half rhino. I mean, here I am, in Ankh-Morpork, Pork, famed in song and story, I mean. In the streets that have known the tread of Herrick Whiteblade, Harun the Barbarian, and Braved the Hublander, and the Weasel. It's all just like I imagined, you know.
Rincewind's face was a mask of fascinated horror.
I just couldn't stand it any more back in Bess Pelagic,
Twoflower went on blithely.
Sitting at a desk all day, just adding up columns of figures, just a pension to look forward to at the end of it. Where's the romance in that? Twoflower, I thought, it's now or never. You don't just have to listen to stories, you can go there. Now's the time to stop hanging around the docks listening to sailors' tales, so I compiled a phrasebook and bought a passage on the next ship to the Brown Islands.
No guards, murmured Rincewind.
No. Why? What have I got that's worth stealing?
Rincewind coughed. You have, gold, he said.
Oh, barely 2,000 rhino. Hardly enough to keep a man alive for more than a month or two. At home, that is. I imagine they might stretch a bit further here.
Would a rhino be one of those big gold coins? Said Rincewind.
Yes.
Twoflower looked worriedly at the wizard over the top of his strange seeing lenses.
Will 2,000 be sufficient, do you think?
Yeah,
croaked Rincewind.
I mean, yes, sufficient.
Good.
Is everyone in the Agatian Empire as rich as you?
Me? Rich? Bless you. Whatever put that idea into your head? I am but a poor clerk. Did I pay the innkeeper too much, do you think?
Twoflower added.
He might have settled for less,
Rincewind conceded.
Ah, I shall know better next time. I can see I have a lot to learn. An idea occurs to me, Rincewind. Would you perhaps consent to be employed as a, I don't know, perhaps the word guide would fit the circumstances? I think I could afford to pay you a rhino a day.
Rincewind opened his mouth to reply, but felt the words huddle together in his throat, reluctant to emerge in a world that was rapidly going mad. Twoflower blushed.
I have offended you, he said. It was an impertinent request to make of a professional man such as yourself. Doubtless you have many projects you wish to return to. Some works of high magic, no doubt.
No, said Rincewind faintly. Not just at present. A rhino, you say. One a day. Every day.
I think perhaps in the circumstances I should make it 1.5 rhino per day, plus any out-of-pocket expenses, of course.
The wizard rallied magnificently.
That will be fine, he said.
Great.
Twoflower reached into his pouch and took out a large round gold object, glanced at it for a moment and slipped it back. Rincewind didn't get a chance to see it properly.
I think, said the tourist, that I would like a little rest now. It was a long crossing. And then perhaps you would care to call back at noon and we can take a look at the city.
Sure.
Then please be good enough to ask the innkeeper to show me to my room.
Rincewind did so, and watched the nervous broadman, who had arrived at a gallop from some back room, lead the way up the wooden steps behind the bar. After a few seconds, the luggage got up and pattered across the floor after them. Then the wizard looked down at the 6 big coins in his hand. Twoflower had insisted on paying his first 4 days' wages in advance. Hugh nodded and smiled encouragingly. Rincewind snarled at him. As a student wizard, Rincewind had never achieved high marks in precognition. But now unused circuits in his brain were throbbing, and the future might as well have been engraved in bright colours on his eyeballs. The space between his shoulder blades began to itch. The sensible thing to do, he knew, was to buy a horse. It would have to be a fast one, and expensive. Offhand, Rincewind couldn't think of any horse dealer he knew who was rich enough to give change out of almost a whole ounce of gold. And then, of course, the other 5 coins would help him set up a useful practice at some safe distance, say 200 miles. That would be the sensible thing. But what would happen to Twoflower, all alone in a city where even the cockroaches had an unerring instinct for gold? A man would have to be a real heel to leave him. The patrician of Ankh-Morpork smiled, but with his mouth only.
"The Hub Gate, you say?" he murmured.
The guard captain saluted smartly.
"Aye, lord, we had to shoot the horse before he would stop. Which, by a fairly direct route, brings you here," said the patrician, looking down at Rincewind. "And what have you got to say for yourself?"
It was rumoured that an entire wing of the patrician's palace was filled with clerks who spent their days collating and updating all the information collected by their master's exquisitely organised spy system. Rincewind didn't doubt it. He glanced towards the balcony that ran down one side of the audience room. A sudden run, a nimble jump, a sudden hail of crossbow quarrels. He shuddered. The patrician cradled his chins in a beringed hand and regarded the wizard with eyes as small and hard as beads.
"Let me see," he said. "Oath-breaking, the theft of a horse, uttering false coinage. Yes, I think it's the arena for you, Rincewind."
This was too much.
"I didn't steal the horse. I bought it fairly. But with false coinage. Technical theft, you see. But those Rhynu are solid gold."
"Rhynu?"
The patrician rolled one of them around in his thick fingers.
"Is that what they're called? How interesting. But as you point out, they are not very similar to dollars."
"Well, of course they're not."
"Ah, you admit it, then."
Rincewind opened his mouth to speak, thought better of it, and shut it again.
"Quite so. And on top of these, there is, of course, the moral obloquy attendant on the cowardly betrayal of a visitor to this shore. For shame, Rincewind."
The patrician waved a hand vaguely. The guards behind Rincewind backed away, and their captain took a few paces to the right. Rincewind suddenly felt very alone. It is said that when a wizard is about to die, death himself turns up to claim him, instead of delegating the task to a subordinate, such as disease or famine, as is usually the case. Rincewind looked around nervously for a tall figure in black. Wizards, even failed wizards, have, in addition to rods and cones, in their eyeballs the tiny octagons that enable them to see into the far octarine, the basic colour of which all other colours are merely pale shadows impinging on normal four-dimensional space. It is said to be a sort of fluorescent greenish-yellow-purple. Was that a flickering shadow in the corner?
"Of course," said the patrician, "I could be merciful."
The shadow disappeared. Rincewind looked up, an expression of insane hope on his face.
"Yes," he said.